Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with a Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
It is 6:44. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS. Well, whether it's the new generation that grew up with cell phones and iPads or those of us that became addicted later in life, there's no question that being constantly connected to technology has had a huge impact on the way we interact with each other. It's something that Sherry Turkle is a psychologist, an MIT professor, and author of the book Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other, has been studying for the last 15 years, and she's come to some fascinating conclusions. Sherry, thanks for joining us this evening. Now, your piece in the New York Times today was titled The Flight from Conversation. It outlines your observations, and the primary one is that we've sacrificed conversation for mere connection. Some people may not know what the difference really is. How would you describe it?
Well, I'm calling mere connection what you get when you text, when you Twitter, when you email. And when I ask people what's wrong with conversation, maybe that's the... when people tell me I'd rather text than talk, or a 16-year-old says, you know, someday I'd like to learn how to have a real conversation. And when I ask him, well, what does he mean by that? He says, well, conversation is scary because it takes place in real time and you can't control what you're going to say. And I think that that's what I get from the people I'm interviewing, what they're afraid to talk on the phone. They're afraid of not being able to hide behind the fact that when we message each other, when we text, we can edit, we can delete, we can retouch, you know, we can present ourselves the way we want to be.
Well, we can also be misunderstood sometimes, too.
Terribly, and that's the trouble I think we're getting ourselves into. But we're not doing it to be misunderstood, we're doing it because we can hide from each other even as we're constantly connected to each other. And I think that gives a lot of people a kind of comforting feeling of safety. I call it the Goldilocks effect. You can hide from each other even as you're kind of comfortably connected to each other, not too close, not too far, just right.
Do you think that the actual nature of interpersonal relationships, like those the kids have with their parents or the ones that couples may have with each other, are now more shallow and less meaningful because of this change?
I wouldn't put it on one dimension, more shallow, less meaningful, but I think that what we have is three things. We feel that we can always be heard, that we can choose when we can be in and out of the places we are. You know, we can choose when we can kind of turn away from a conversation and go to a different place, pick up a phone, go to a text, almost kind of bail out of the place we are to go someplace else. And then third, that we'll never have to be alone with our thoughts, even for a moment.
Aren't those three fantastic things?
And, well, no, they're kind of not three fantastic things. They're three very seductive things, but they're not necessarily three fantastic things. Because, you know, when you watch people, when they're alone for a moment, you know, at a checkout line in a supermarket or at a red light, I mean, they panic, they reach for a device, and if you can't be alone, if you don't have the capacity for solitude, for really being able to kind of gather your thoughts, then you connect with other people not because you really want to know them as who they are as individuals, but because you sort of have to in order to feel not alone. So you connect. And that's not the best basis for a relationship.
Well, when you're talking to these young people, I mean, they're in the midst of this life. They grew up with this stuff. They are constantly connected. Aren't they, in a sense, kind of in that suspended state of always remaining connected? And as long as it's there, can't they continue to rely on that?
Well, what I'm saying is that they're relying on something that's denying them opportunities for a capacity they need to develop relationships that are more than just connections. So I'm not saying that if they just keep connecting, they're going to be okay. I'm saying that the connections they're forming by staying just connected are not letting them really separate in order to form the relationships they need to form.
I'm talking to Sherry Turkle, a psychologist and MIT professor and the author of the book Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. I mean, Sherry, don't young people, though, have one or two, three maybe good friends that they do have conversations with, and then as an adjunct to that, they have their online life also?
Yes, and I think that people who do that, and there are many who do that, they don't get into trouble. In other words, this what I'm writing about is not a kind of condemnation of a generation. If you know how to do that, you're doing fine. But I'm finding that a lot of people are starting to lose that sense of difference between what it is to get together with a small group of friends regularly and really talk, and what it is to have this need for this constant connection all the time, so that when you're alone with your thoughts for a minute, you feel a sense of panic. And it's that I'm addressing and that I'm saying is not good. Because if we don't teach our children to be alone, they'll only know how to be lonely. You need to know how to gather yourself and be with your own thoughts and be somehow content with that, so that when you turn to another person, it's not to just connect because you don't feel alive unless you have a connection.
In order to form
a real relationship.
What do you make of Facebook? Obviously, it's a huge central social meeting place for young and old, certainly now.
Yeah.
In some ways, it shows the underlying truth, maybe, that most of our relationships, especially when it comes to extended family, may really just be connections pre or post Facebook. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't think Facebook necessarily shows that at all. I think people use Facebook in dramatically different ways. For some people, Facebook is a way to take their close family members, people who they see in all kinds of close, you know, intimate ways, and make sure that they share photos and events with them. And I applaud that. In other words, there's nothing about this technology that means we have to use it unwisely. My work is not a condemnation of this technology.
Well, I guess the question, though, Sherry, is it possible to really use it wisely? Isn't there something innately addictive and socializing in the technology itself that keeps us from holding on to that other aspect of our humanity, of this kind of deeper level of conversation?
Well, maybe in the first smitten generation. In other words, what I think we have is that in Alone Together, I think I have a line that says, you know, we're like young lovers and who are afraid that too much talking will spoil the romance. We're smitten like young lovers. We're afraid that too much talking will spoil the romance. And what I mean by that is that, you know, this stuff is very new. And so we're saying, oh, the technology made me an addict. The technology made me do it. It's very early days. And I think it's very natural that we sort of got caught up in all the things the technology allows us to do. But I think now, I think that my research and many other people's research is starting to show that some of this stuff really isn't good for our relationships with each other. And more than that, it's not good for our relationships with ourselves. It's not good for our own capacity for self-reflection.
I mean, in a sense, do we then, by having the technology to lean on, we're less dependent on other people to feel good and to connect, and we view them as maybe less valuable over time?
Well, I think we've just got to get ourselves out of that. I mean, I think that insofar as that's happening, we're shortchanging ourselves, because this technology is not offering us the sustenance and the nurturance that we need. It's not even offering the sustenance and the nurturance to teach us how to reflect on our own situations. If every time we come to a red light, you see people behaving as though they're in some kind of withdrawal symptom and they need to reach for a phone. So,
let me ask, as a psychologist, what do you think of the idea that many people really don't have a lot to say in a conversation and may, in fact, prefer to avoid any kind of deep interaction anyway? Doesn't this new world of mere connections suit them perfectly?
Well, you know, as a psychologist, I just don't think that that's the case. I think that people do have thoughts, do have feelings, and, you know, the idea that you have nothing more interesting, you have so little to say that you might as well say it to a machine that doesn't understand you, is just selling people short. So, no, I don't buy that line at all.
Tell me, what do you?
I find people endlessly fascinating.
Well, that's certainly a good thing. I do wonder, what do you see on campus there at MIT? Do you see this newer generation of students much more distracted and just this constant connection, even in a classroom setting? And
absolutely, absolutely. And I think we have a lot of the conversations with my students in which they are admitting that they're distracted, that they feel technology's pull, and you know, it's the older generation that wired these classrooms, and that now, you know, it's not just wired for Wi-Fi, but you have the cell network on it, and we've distracted them, and they have these technologies that are pulling them away from being with each other in a community.
Well, and the crazy thing is, if you don't engage on these levels, if you don't get on Facebook, maybe do some tweeting, you're in a sense almost left out.
Well, you know, I don't think that, again, I think this is because it's early days. I think that we are going to learn to make our classrooms, our meetings, kind of sacred, our family dinners, sacred spaces in which we say, I need to be in some communities that are face-to-face communities because I'm selling myself short. And I think more and more people are going to opt for that, because it is crazy to come to a three-hour seminar and spend your time buying shoes, updating your Facebook page, and tweeting. That is a crazy use of the, what, $10,000 that that class cost you.
Wow, that is some world-class multitasking. Sherry Turkle, a psychologist and MIT professor, and the author of the book Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. Sherry, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
And we are coming right back. I'm Michael Cohen, and you're listening to 1320 WILS.